Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live don't concern that. Man, we gon' have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This is movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word.
Any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussyfooting, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker upmade me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they've fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Yes, yes. Welcome to another edition of Your World News. Again, in conjunction and collaboration with the Nimbrew Media Collective, I'm one of your hosts, Solomon, and in studio, I'm joined by Brother Kai, who is a senior at the University of Maryland, and Dara will be joining us soon. But we got another great episode, and just want to, before we just go through some basic housekeeping before we get started. If at any point you want to call in with a comment or a question, You know, I believe this is another one of those very thought-provoking topics that that we're addressing today. So feel free to call in if you feel comfortable to, you know, call in with a question or a comment. That call-in number is 516-418-5539. Again, that is 516-418-5539. I've introduced myself, and I'm going to let Brother Kai introduce himself.
So my name is Kai Bradner. I'm a senior public policy major, and of course, I'm always excited to be here. I'm excited for our topic today. We're talking about the power of names and implications that names have, especially for POCs. So I'm excited to dive into it.
And when you say, for those folks that may not know, when you say POC, what do you what is that acronym?
People of Color.
So you guys got that, People of Color.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and this is, the, you know, this, again, this is one of the show topics that, that is derived from the students in our production meeting. This is, you know, Kai and Dara came up with this idea, and I thought it was like, seriously, like, par for the course. I thought it was really, really important, you know, as we delve into names, all right, linguistics, like, names and nomenclature and what these names are, how they be, you know, we want to even delve into even like the fact that even the names that we have, that a lot of us have that were born and raised in the Western Hemisphere. A lot of the names we have are the last names, and it's something we don't think about a lot of times as people of African ancestry, but these names, and even if you're an indigenous American, if you're a Native American, right? Same thing happened with them. These names were names that were derived from their oppressors, their colonizers, their slave masters. So when you see a black person that has the last name Smith or Williams, things of that nature, Bryant, you know, O'Connell or whatever, you know, those are the last names of their ancestors, of their great-great-great-great-great-grandmother, grandfather. Those are the last names of their slave masters. Their ancestors, slave masters. And just like you domesticate, somebody domesticates a dog or a cat, whatever it is, those pets take on the names, whatever name that the owner gives it. But in this case, we're not talking about dogs or cats or pets in general. We're talking about human beings. We're talking about human beings being given, having their names stripped away from them. And you're given this name. By force, by absolute force, and I think that's important. So I want to play this real quick take, but this is just one aspect that we're talking about today. We're also going to be talking about some of the negative names that we've taken upon, and quite frankly, because there's this huge chasm, this huge chasm in terms of historical perspective and historical context. Many of us kind of make excuses for and kind of try to say, oh, we're given this revisionist history, and we're gonna take on this negative name that's been given to us, that has been attributed to us by racist white folks. You know, whether that is the N-word, and I'll just say it, whether that's the word nigger or something else, and we're gonna get into that as well. But I want to play this clip. This is really. Really, really important stuff. So I'm going to play this clip, and then we'll get on to the other on the other side. Our other co-host has got here. Dara just got here, and she can introduce herself, and we'll hit the ground running.
I want to hear you say your name. Your name is Toby. What's your name?
Kunta.
Lord God, help the boy. They're going to put him dead. What's your name? Say it. Toby. Who are you? Say your name.
Oh,
What's your name?
Toby.
Hi. Say it again.
Say it louder so they all can hear you. What's your name? Toby.
So that is from obviously that's not obviously because I know some people may have not seen it, but that is painful, powerful clip from the movie Roots, right? As we know, Roots, you know, came out, you know, decades ago. You know, that was LeVar Burton's character being whipped. The character he played, Kunta Kinte, and he was being whipped, and that's not a made up dramatization. That is something that literally happened, and oftentimes the enslaved African, right? They were Africans before they were enslaved. The enslaved African was whipped or beaten or lynched till they died, right? But that's how badly they wanted to make sure. And why would they go to that such lengths? Was it just being just completely evil and mean? Yeah, they definitely were evil and devilish in those actions. But no, it was much more of a methodic decision on that part. Also, it was the fact that once you rip someone's culture away from them, and your name is rooted in culture, especially these enslaved Africans, they had African names. Once you take that away from them and you take other aspects of their culture, their mores, their values, take them and you rip them away, then you start to shape them in your image and likeness. Once you do that, now, as we all know, now the not the, just the domestication, but the psychological enslavement, which is much, much more powerful than the physical enslavement, because once you psychologically enslave someone, and then you start to make them, you get them to believe that no matter how badly they are oppressing you or beating you, no matter how bad that is you start to believe that is your lot in life. And they literally would say, you work hard for us, you toil day in and toil day at night, for the white man, you'll be rewarded when you die, when you go to heaven, because God is a white man too. And these are things that were said. I'm not making this up, but we thought it was powerful to start off with that. So, Daryl, Kai and I already have given our spiel. We've introduced ourselves. You can introduce yourself, and as we start the show, what is your take on this?
Hi everyone. Again, my name is Sarah Somerville, and I just feel like this is just an interesting topic for us to talk about today, as I personally have experienced, you know, some little off-puttings about my name in general. So I feel like just to bring attention to not just like surnames and first names, but different terms that are being used in every day-to-day life or in our day-to-day speech, we're just a little bit more aware about where certain phrases come from and just be more mindful of how we use it and who we use it against or who we use it towards.
So, as I said before you got here, I let the folks know that this was y'all idea, you know, and it was a heck of an idea, a great idea for a show, really great idea for a show. But I want to hit the ground running. I mean, you know, that's a perfect segue, I think, or close to perfect segue. You talked about your backdrop. Can you share with the crowd, with our audience, because you mentioned that you have experience with this. Can you talk about that experience?
Well, first experience I've had was just simply about my first name, with it being Dara, and that may be like, you may be like, what do you mean? Like, it's so simple, but it's a lot of times where, since literally I was born, it's been overcomplicated to something else. People are like, oh, why didn't your parents name you this? Why didn't they name you that? Your name is spelled like Dara, Duray. Like, there's just so many variations that are not my name, and I've always had to turn to, okay, well, it rhymes with Sarah. Everybody gets Sarah. So even something as simple as that can be overcomplicated, and people will still judge you regardless, make it kind of seem like you're the problem. And there's been many times as I was younger that I wanted to change my name because I felt like people couldn't understand the simple six-letter pronunciation or spelling of my name. So it's something, it's just as respect. I would want you to learn my name just as you would want me to learn your name. So it's just all around, that's just a basic kind of thing that I was thinking about. And then recently I've been seeing like a lot of videos on social media talking about like why African-American people or African people of color in general, why do they keep naming their children with these long, quote-unquote, unique names? Like, what's the purpose? Nobody can understand. It's traumatizing for the children. But we have to understand it's only traumatizing when you say it to them, when you make them feel like they're out of place or they're doing something wrong. So I feel like this is a topic that, of course, we should bring attention to because there's nothing wrong with the name that your parents give you. So, yeah.
Yeah, and wanted to ask you, both of you, and maybe starting with you, Kai, what are your thoughts on the use of the word nigger, like the and the whole the talk that, you know, we're taking something back from the white man and something negative from the white man and making it positive and creating it into a term of endearment.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a very complex, you know, issue, as we talk about the power of words and, you know, their meaning and their impact as well. And there's just so much history with the word,
yeah.
And the way it's been, I guess, co-opted, for lack of a better term. And that kind of goes to show how, tools of, like, oppression and colonization kind of, like, change and spread over time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we never see the word used in a very positive connotation or context as well. So, I mean, it kind of still sounds like someone back in the slavery days using it as well. It's always used to demean somebody. It's used to, like, you know, call someone stupid. So I don't think it's a nice word. I don't think it should be said.
And then piggyback off of that. So, like, when I was looking up the origin of the word nigger, it was used throughout the 19th and 20th century to reinforce racial hierarchy and segregation and discrimination. And I do know that that word is the original word is a Latin word for black, but the Europeans just kind of switched it around and used it against us, so turned it kind of to a derogatory term, or gave it a derogatory connotation during, like, the transatlantic
slave trade. Yeah, there's this whole thought about the whole negus thing, but there's not, like, even those people that come up with that, though, that there's no historical, like, account that black people were walking around even using that term, and, you know, that was like almost like a reach when people, but this, out of the whole, like all the other terms that, you know, could be used, you know, Kai referring to is, hey, how you doing, queen? How you doing, king? You know,
yeah.
You know, I have, you know, I've had brothers tell me, hey, how you doing, king? How you doing, champ? You know, just, brother, how you doing, sister? You know, it's just, to me, that takes on a whole nother meaning. Like, and we hear that, right, at rallies, brothers and sisters,
yeah.
Brothers and sisters, you know, and I just, like, when you say that, it just takes on this meaning. Even if you don't really know the person well, you, like, you know, mm-hmm. just calling them, you know, that's my sister right there, that's my
yeah.
brother. It you know, there's a lot that goes into words. And, you know,
yeah.
even when we were talking about last week, remember we were saying that, you know, how some men and women might call each other, you know, the B
yeah.
word and so
yeah.
forth, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a connection that we might have with each other once, if we call each other, like, brother, sister, cousin. Like, I feel like, and sometimes it can make others feel good because, you know, you already have that base connection about your race and things like that. But on another note, like, you're able to kind of, it's a little comforting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's uplifting sometimes, especially if I'm getting called queen or
yeah.
like, just things like that, because it's like it's a steer away from what we're used to hearing. Like, we're used to hearing the B word being said all the time. We're used to hearing, like, ho all the time.
Yes.
Other derogatory terms that are used against
yes.
us in the meaning, and, like, kind of trying to put us down rather than hearing, like, queen all the time. So I personally like it. Like, I like when people do that.
Yeah.
It's very, the attention is there, you know, to have, like, negative connotations for certain words, and those certain words are, you know, used in certain communities.
And, like, when people, oftentimes when people use words like that or say things like that towards you, they're not saying it in a tone or a matter that they don't mean it. Like, it's always genuine, I feel like. So, yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah. And just saying, like, the names in general, anthropologists, like, refer to names as something as human universal, just meaning, like, everyone has a name, everything has a name. It's kind of how we, like, it's like a social identification, almost.
Yeah.
And as we talk about, you know, the N-word, other, like, derogatory terms, yeah, I feel like calling someone that kind of strips away their humanity. Universal human experience. And there's other terms, like, you know, you can call someone a thug or ghetto or refer to them. Other ways, but at the end of the day, the point is to inflict pain and take away, you know, a part of themselves.
Yeah,
and that's kind of how, like, slavery is so prevalent, stuff like that, because you don't really feel human.
And I'm glad both of you guys brought that up, and also, it is. I mean, we're doing this on a, you know, on a live radio podcast. I understand, and you know, we've invited a lot of folks to listen in, and I know that they're, you know, based on, you know, the switchboard, I know there are people who are listening live right now. You can call in, but, and so we've expanded this conversation, but I've always said that this, like, the use of the word nigger, that as much as, you know, I have disdain for that and would prefer black people referring, not using that word to refer to each other in a good way. You know what I'm saying? As much as that is, I've told folks that is it's very much a family type conversation, an internal conversation with our community, because when you have, and I want to throw it out to you guys, because I have strong thoughts about that. When you hear a white person, so if we're having this dialogue and we don't like the use of that word, or we think that there's definitely 100% more appropriate words or more powerful, you know, psychologically, culturally powerful words to be used in lieu of the word nigger. The whole conversation about when white folks say, hey, well, you guys call each other that. Well, you know, I tell them, you're not part of our community. All right. I don't use it, but even the folks in my community that use it to refer to one another, that doesn't, just because you hear it in a rap song, does not give you the right to use that, you know, directed towards Kai. Hey, what up, my nigga? You know what I'm saying? Because there'll be white boys that do that. Yeah. Oh, that's my nigga. You know what I'm saying? No doubt there have been that happens. And as we said last time in the production meeting, we talked about, you know, you guys being at parties or venues and just cringing when a song's being played and the word nigger's being, not just that, but the fact you look around and it's a bunch of white students singing those terms, nigga this, nigga that, nigga that. You know what I'm saying? And I'll stop here. I've always, like, when I've given talks or lectures, and I, you know, the very few times when a white person has brought that up, I say to them, if I have female friends, which I do, right, platonic female friends, and I hear them refer to each other as bitch, right? And they say that, all right, I might not get it, but guess what? Because if I'm not a misogynist or I'm not a sexist, I have no desire to replicate. That is a relationship that the two of them have. And I am not a woman. I'm not a black woman. So I have no right whatsoever to go in there myself and say, hey, what up, bitch? So unless you have some kind of deep seat, if you're white and you have some type of something deep in your soul that's been trying to claw out that you really, really love using the word nigger, that there's a problem with you. There's something deep down with you. I would say deep down inside, you are a closet racist. You are a closet racist, and you are searching for any excuse to call a black person nigger. Because once we say that we do not condone a white person using that word to call us whatever, that's it. That the end of conversation, that should be it. That should be it. That should be it. And you should understand that and say, listen, I'm going to respect my black friends. I'm going to respect these black people, even if they're not my, I'm going to respect that because they don't, they, you know, they're saying they do not like the use of that. And as we know, the word nigger is hate speech, right? If it's, mm-hmm. if it's drawn on a building at the University of Maryland or whatever university and the police see it and it gets reported, that's reported as a hate speech, just as if a swastika is drawn. So what are your takes about white people using that word?
Well, personally, of course, the face on is at my name. It definitely makes me uncomfortable because I have been in scenes where it's been used and people have been singing, rapping, doing the whole nine. And it's like, what can I really do about it? Because, you know, deep down inside me, I want to punch everybody, like, realistically. But you can't do that. Like, you have to stay... I kind of had to stay grounded, and even going into that kind of scene, that party scene with my friends, they were like, well, of course, they're all, like, different races, like, they're not black, so they kind of made me a little bit aware, and I'm like, yeah, right, like, you know, I would think people learn a little better, or know a little better, but to be very honest, when you're in a scene where there's just a whole bunch of white people, they're all, like, drinking, they're all under influences of whatever substances they may intake, they're going to do and say whatever they want to, regardless. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, I kind of not, unfortunately, I hate to say it in this way, but not really take it with a grain of salt, but it's, like, I'm just observing. I'm really observing how they act, what's really shown, like, what are their thoughts about even just saying words as like this, and it doesn't even have to be in a scene where people are under the influence. Like, it literally could be at a game and you'll just hear it casually. Like, it's just so unfortunate that it happens so often. And even on social media where you see there's so, like, say there's, like, a black and white, like, either couple or friend group or, like, whatever, they'll be like, oh, can I have an inward patch? When that trend, when that trend was going around, there was like a whole bunch of like groups being like, oh, can I have an N-word pass? Can I have an N-word pass? But why do you feel the need?
Yeah, exactly. Can I say? Exactly. Exactly.
There's so many other words that you can use. First, what do you even need to be using it in the sense that you're referring,
yeah, exactly.
referring to somebody as like nigger or nigga? Like, So I always hate, I kind of had to like filter out my search or my like For You page. Because it's disturbing, like, you guys feel the need, and I can't even just limit it to, like, a white group, because there are other groups that feel like they have to say the word, or, like, oh, they grew up in this area, so they feel like they have to say it, like, no, and even I was in the instance at work where, like, I'm with a girl, I thought we were close, and, of course, she's not black, she's not white, but it's, like, still, there's so many, like, Just stop. Why is that in your vocabulary? Yeah. Who told you that was okay? And would you even speak to your parents like that?
Yeah.
It just makes me question a lot of things, but I can't even think too deeply into it because I can't let every single thing bother. It does bother me, but I can't let it bother me to the point where I'm going insane, because at the end of the day, honestly, that's between you and God, so.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of, like, wanting to be a part of the culture.
Yeah.
I think especially black cultures, it's in social media, it's in hip hop, it's very prevalent. Black hip hop's like been pioneered so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a way to, like, I don't know, be a part of that, they like think they can like cough that word, feel like. Because even when I moved overseas in the Middle East, everyone was saying about that to high school. And it was a huge culture.
Oh, really?
Like, it was everyone, like, every nationality, and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. I never expected, like, to come to, like, Doha and, like, see everyone using it. Like, these people have, like, lived in Phillips Store. You know, it was crazy.
And it's, like, people associate that word with being, like, either with poverty or, like,
mm-hmm.
being in the ghetto,
mm-hmm.
or even as far as AAVE, it's like, oh, yeah, if I speak this way, if I grew up, let's say, I don't really know, like, Georgia, Texas, parts of New York, it's okay to say those words because that's what everybody says, but no, regardless, it's not.
Yeah.
Being black was not cool until it became a trend.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't understand why people still feel, and it's not even just like the inward. It's all
it's the accent,
the quote unquote black accent that nobody has except for you. Like, it's so weird. It gets.
It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I had someone was supposed to be my college roommate sophomore year. Actually, he said that.
Really?
He was like, well, I grew up,
like
in that area. I'm like, yeah,
difference.
Exactly. But never talked to him again.
It doesn't give you the right to just fake an accent that literally nobody has. If you look up on social media, like, black accent, but not from a black person, like, from any other race, it's going to sound very much, weird. Like, it's disturbing because it's like, Who do you hear on a daily basis that talks like that, that has a strong accent? Even, like, I saw this one girl, she was, like, from Louisiana, but it was, like, nobody, I promise you nobody talks like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a little bit different.
Yeah, exactly. With that being said, I want to actually play another soundbite, and we'll I come back to that, but this is Malcolm X, and what, you know, he had some really strong sentiments, and we're not even talking about the word nigger. We're talking about his repudiation of you know, Eurocentric names that were, you know, that were imposed upon his ancestors and black people writ large. This was an interview that he did with these two, you know, white so-called journalists, and they're interviewing him and you know, really trying to press him to divulge to them, you know, why or what his and they already know. I mean, everyone knows that his European last name, the last name that was given to his ancestors by those, you know, Euro-American slave masters was Little, and they were just pressing him to say the word Little, and he repudiated. I mean, you can only imagine what he would have said about the word nigger. But I want to play this.
Malcolm X. That's your legal name? As far as I'm concerned, it's my legal name. Have you been to court to establish? I didn't have to go to court to be called Murphy or Jones or Smith. Excuse me for answering you this way. That's a Chinese person who worked to say his name was Patrick Murphy. You look at him like he's insane, because Murphy is an Irish name, a European name, or the name that has a Caucasian or a white background. And a yellow person, Chinese is a yellow man, and he has nothing to do or no connection whatsoever with the name Murphy. And if it doesn't look proper for a person who is yellow or Chinese to be walking around named Murphy or Jones or Johnson or Bunch or Powell, I think it would be just as improper for a black person or the so-called Negro in this country, as we're taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, to walk around with these names. And therefore, he teaches us that during slavery, the same slave master who owned us put his last name on us to denote that we were his property. But when you see a Negro today who's named Johnson, if you go back in his history, you'll find that he was once his grandfather or one of his forefathers was owned by a white man who was named Johnson. His name is Bunch. His grandfather was owned by a white man that was named Bunch.
Would you mind telling me what your father's last name was?
My father didn't know his last name. My father got his last name from his grandfather, and his grandfather got it from his grandfather, who got it from the slave master. The real names of our people were destroyed during slavery.
Was there any line, any point in the genealogy of your family when you did have to use the last name? And if so, what was it?
The last name of my forefathers was taken from them when they were brought to America and made slaves. And then the name of the slave master was given, which we refuse. We reject that name today.
You mean you won't even tell me what your father's supposed last name was or gifted last name was?
I never acknowledge it whatsoever.
And that is the great, the inimitable El Haj Malik El Shabazz, little piece of history, you know, you may or may not know, but that is the name that he settled on. As we know, black Muslims in the Nation of Islam, which he was in at that time, you know, before he broke away from the NOI, you know, they would take upon the last name X. They shed their European last name. And as a placeholder, they take on X until they decide upon, or as it is decided upon, what their new name will be. And the name that he, when he was assassinated and he died, the name that he had, the legal name he had, was El Haj Malik El Shabazz, otherwise known as Malcolm X. But I always think that's just powerful, powerful. His resolve, you know, he was able to dissect, you know, intellectually dissect folks that he was having like these, you know, debates with, and without losing his cool, keeping his calm. I mean, he was, as I say, that's one of my superheroes, right? But go on.
So I actually do have something to say about, like, decisions or people's decisions, families' decisions to change their surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So some things are, like, cultural reclamation. So they're choosing the new surname that might reflect, like, a desire to reconnect with maybe, like, African heritage, or just the culture in general. Mm-hmm. As, like, many enslaved individuals were forced to, like, they were separated from their origins,
right,
and languages, like, such as Malcolm X said.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gave, like, a symbol of freedom. So people changing their surnames became a symbolic act of asserting freedom. And just it kind of marked a break from the oppressive history of the slavery that happened and the name that they were originally given.
Right.
In attempt to establish a new identity and become free from the legacy of their legacy of enslavement.
Mm-hmm.
And then the expression of empowerment. So it allowed this act allowed individuals and families to assert control over their narratives, the challenges of historical injustices, and celebrate their unique new identities. And then finally, the resistance to oppression. So this act of changing their surnames can be seen as a form of resistance against the dehumanization practices of slavery, and the way to resist the continued marginalization of African Americans in the post-emancipation era. So that's just like a little thing I put together about surnames, or what I got from surnames, because I know that a lot of, in the Black community, there are a lot of folks who do change their last name.
Yeah.
And then I can speak personally. My family had changed their last name, I'm going to say, 4 generations before I was born.
Really?
Because, of course, you know, unfortunately, you have, like, the slave master and then the slave, and my family got intertwined with having or bearing children with the slave, with the slave master. Son. And so it was my great-great-great-great-grandma who decided to give her twin the last name of after Frederick Douglass, because he was the most prominent African-American or Black person during that time. So this was like early 1800s, I believe. So it's just like very interesting how people change it, what they change it to, and the reasons that they change it for.
Yeah.
No, definitely. Kind of piggybacking off of that, I read a little bit by Sandra West. She's a Black author, mm-hmm. and she talked a lot about like the 1960s and like the Black Power movement, and how Black people started to use different names, like first names and surnames, to kind of like take back control and take back the narrative.
Yeah.
You know who we are as people.
Right.
And so I think as now we look at like a bunch of more interesting names that are out there, especially for like younger Black kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually like really cool to see like creativity being used, like for children, because I mean names kind of like set you up for life. I know my grandparents used to say your name kind of like not tells your destiny, but you know that's how it is. Like what you used to do used to be like your last name or something like that. And so kind of like, you know, it's like a propeller forward, you know, going forward.
Yeah.
I always think back to that that Kanye song All Falls Down.
Yeah.
Like she couldn't afford a car, she's named her daughter Alexis.
Yeah.
Kind of like saying up for the future, like I won't be able to, but my child will. And in order to like pass it through, here's the name.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen, and it's just interesting, you know, what we kind of have. And I would say it is a kind of like a form of domestication. We've been domesticated to come up with these reasons why, you know. And I've seen guys literally throughout my life, fight for, you know, like get into like fist fights for being called less, mm-hmm. being called less than that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You call me, you know what I'm saying? You know, and not fighting white boys, but fighting each other, you know, because you gonna say that again? You gonna say that again? And, you know, and so clearly, you know, they're taking offense, rightfully so, to you know, certain words and names called to them. But it's interesting how, you know, one of the most vile names that is associated with it, you know, because if you were to do a poll of most black folks to say, like, what is the one word that you do not want to be called by a white person? And it would be a slam dunk. I mean, it would have to be 80-90% has got to be nigger.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Nigger. And then maybe the rest would be like boy. Like, you call me
yeah.
boy? You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Boy, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's another one.
Yeah.
You know, because white, like, and we're not even talking about, we're talking about like one generation removed where white people would, you know, it was common
yeah.
to call a grown black man boy. Yeah, boy. Like, they call a grown black man boy. You know, that was that. You know, that was common, man.
Yeah.
And also, kind of to steer back to what you were saying, like, you basically black people fighting other black people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, I think, even names that have to deal with colorism that people don't. Well, I'm not gonna say they don't recognize, but don't really think twice about. So even like, for instance, if you're lighter skin or light skin, you're getting called like red bone or high yellow. And then if you're dark skin or darker skin tone, you're being called like darky or blacky. And people just don't really think about that too often. And then also, because I vaguely remember seeing this at the African American History Museum, the paper bag test.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my parents explained to me what it was.
Mm-hmm.
The test of discriminatory practices, and where, you know, lighter skin tone or lighter than the paper bag, it was considered more socially acceptable or privileged.
Yeah.
And then even like the tar baby, and even, or having like good hair versus nappy hair. I hear that being
said. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Too often, actually.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's just like those biases.
Oh, you got that good hair. Yeah.
Related to hair texture.
Oh my gosh, that is so powerful. Yeah, what you just said.
Yeah.
Think about that. That is so, so powerful. What you said, like, good hair. Good hair, and without even realizing it, they have taken on the ideals of beauty
mm-hmm.
are predicated on white people's ideals of beauty.
Right.
They can try to shape shift it any way they want, but when you're talking about, you know, this free flowing straight stringy hair, as Malcolm used to say, that dog like hair, because he would say that
mm-hmm.
because he's trying to get black people to wake up. He's like, that they got that dog like hair. Dogs
mm-hmm.
have that nice stringy hair, you know. And they want to make fun of your nose, but they got that nice, that pointy nose, that pointy nose, and you know, and you're turning down your beautiful, you know, thick lips and whatever, but they're basing that on European ideals, like
exactly.
that good hair, or I'm buying skin lightening cream. I mean, look at, people might not say it. Kai and I might get you know, verbally attacked by the beehive, but if you look at Beyonce now, she's clearly, something has been done to her skin. Whether, you know, because if you look at the latest Verizon commercial, look at the latest Verizon commercial, and you look at her skin tone just 3-4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, she's much lighter now. I mean, she's really, really light right now.
And a lot of people associate being lighter skin with more privilege.
Yeah.
Like, so I remember last week we were talking about it, going back to, like, house Negro and field Negro, like, the association for...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, those words used,
mm-hmm.
For, like, enslaved and, like... Let me get myself together. Like, those domestic roles. cleaning and cooking and childcare. They saw it as more of like a privilege. They loved their master.
Masters more than they love themselves.
Yeah. And the field Negro, like that term, of course, was granted that being an enslaved, engaging in more labor intense, like work and tasks. Like
Thank you.
Stuff like that. But it also created division between those who worked inside and then outside of the plantation. So it's like,
They might be receiving
little to no like food, water, shelter, covering. Like no matter what the weather is, you have to do work regardless.
Yeah.
And then you know in the house, like they had all that. It still could have been hot, but at least they had like they had access to like water.
Yeah, they didn't want to. Like,
basic necessities.
A cool like kind of like antidote, just like how you can either like reject your Western society eurocentric ideas or embrace them.
Yeah.
Now like how we see that within the Black community today.
Yeah.
You know, some people kind of like sell their soul and like you know get really rich on the backs of other people that involve the Catholic society. And some you know try to actually help the community and stay in the local communities. And, you know it's gonna be hard to like you know be successful. It kind of shows like you know along with names as well. It's just like. You can choose to give your child like a white Brazilian name or a black Brazilian name, and that will like affect them in the workplace. You know, it's just a crazy vicious cycle. I mean, it's so hard to break. I don't know if there is a way to break it.
Yeah, well, it starts I think with conversations like this. You know, in the household, in the community, it forms on shows. I mean, I never underestimate the power of podcasts and YouTube. Some people have like really great audiences, like expansive audiences on YouTube, and they'll raise this. And I think that like people need to be challenged. I mean, sometimes as a kid, you know, elders, like things I was doing, like them putting me in a position to critically think about my actions.
Yeah.
And then you stop for a second. Oh shit. Damn. I didn't realize that. You know, because I was just walking along. I wasn't actively thinking. I wasn't critically thinking about my actions or what I did. And I think a lot of folks, you know, in our community have to be, you know, through conversation, you know, it doesn't have to be like calling names or shouting, but putting them in position in positions where they have to like critically think. Did you know that word right there is the last word that some of our ancestors heard right before they died. Die, nigga, die.
Mm-hmm.
Die, nigga, die. As they were, hang that nigga. Hang that nigga. That nigga, hang. And that was literally the last words that they heard before they died.
Yeah.
And I have seen people think, like, damn, I never thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Because we're not supposed to think about it that way. And Kai, it goes to other realms as well, that things that we've accepted from Euro-Americans because they want us to take on image and likeness and they don't care. Yes, the country may becoming browner, but those white folks that really understand the game, they're not really super concerned with that as long as they can control black and brown people politically. They don't have to worry because guess what? They're going to buy our products. They're not going to think about establishing, you know, vertical economies in their community. Shit, they're not even going to even think about establishing, you know, voting blocks in their community.
Yeah.
We literally can have we're talking about the election coming up, and we have one, like, just openly, like, super openly, like, racist guy. And then, but the thing is, the fact of the matter that some of us see Biden as an alternative. Why do I have to accept one of these two?
Mm-hmm.
Why do I have to accept Trump, if I'm not going to accept Trump, which I'm not, why do I accept the guy that wrote the Crime Bill Act that is responsible for warehousing millions upon millions? Because damn it, if Trump wrote that, then rightfully so, you would have so many black folks, just simply because he's a Republican, would have so many black folks saying, yo, he wrote the Crime Bill Act, rightfully so. But because we have been warehoused into the Democratic Party plantation, this dude can have that track record, and we make excuses, or go on the Breakfast Club before the election and tell Charlemagne, if you don't vote for me, you're not black enough. Who the MFing are you to tell me what? And just get a pass like that.
Yeah.
Black folks just gave him a pat, like just gave him a pass like that. I'm like, y'all are crazy. That was one of those conversations where I was like, no, y'all are crazy. I had that you've got to be freaking kidding me. You think it's okay? Oh, it was just a show. No, who's gonna tell me? Like, what? Would you have taken it the same way if Trump said that? No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Of course not, because they've cordoned you off into that Democratic Party plantation to make you believe that the Democratic Party is like your Lord and Savior, and it's gonna bring you to no, you don't get respect from either party until you show a willingness.
Yeah.
To make people earn your vote,
mm-hmm.
to make people earn your vote. But if you just keep giving it up, they're not gonna respect you, right? We talk about that all the time. Like when you're picking friends, if you're not gonna make them earn your respect and earn your trust, then why the hell would they?
Yeah, like going through what Malcolm X said about the liberals.
Yeah.
Secret enemy in the back.
Yeah, he's like one snarls his teeth, and the other one is still a book, but they are wearing sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
They're wearing sheep's clothing, you know. And one will do this, and the other one will take you right into the cotton patch.
Yeah.
And he was exactly right, you know. And the crazy thing, you know, Martin Luther King said the same thing about white liberals.
Yeah.
They said the same exact thing.
Yeah. And you look at policies today.
Yeah.
You see. I feel like no Democrat, majority of Democrats aren't looking to make actual radical change.
No, they're not.
It's pretty much like status quo, like very slow increment change while people just die.
Exactly. Those, when we talk about gentrification, when you see black and brown communities being gentrified, which is another word for ethnic cleansing, it will be a bunch of white liberals that are front and center about that, you know, and they're ethnic cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
When they're redlining the community, mm-hmm. when they're talking about building bigger, you know, prisons and so forth, they do that just as much as Republicans. And I'll take it another level. When it comes to war and imperialism, Democrats press the button just like, going all the way back to Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Oh, yeah.
Truman was a Democrat, mm-hmm. But then look at the you know, from Clinton to Obama, I'll say it, you know what I'm saying? Like, they were executing war just as much as Bush and Cheney.
Yeah.
But it's because, but when you have these blinders on and they have,
how
they present it to you, you just don't get it, man. So that's why, the conversations are so important. And I don't ever run from these conversations because I'll end on this. I'm telling you, I've seen that some that eschew the information, they don't want to listen, but I'm telling you, I have seen brothers and sisters get this information for the first time. There's a couple that I almost wish that they were in this office right now, and they will tell you because that the time when we had these conversations, they were all the way in that plantation, in that little, that warehouse, that plantation. They are the furthest thing from that right now, and they will tell you it wasn't until they were encouraged to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
It was when they made the decision. Oh shit.
Yeah.
You know. Shoot, yeah. I did. And there was one point when I was like in high school, I used to think, oh yeah, Democrat. You know.
Yeah.
And then it was like some old heads and my parents like started to get me to think oh really? Damn.
Yeah.
You know. And I left that train of thought a long time ago. But I wasn't born and just derived at this juncture. No.
It's a journey.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
But I like what you said about gentrification really being ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the name thing and how names kind of like can conceal stuff and hide things. Because when you hear gentrification, you're like, okay, like people, I know people always say there's pros and cons, but
mm-hmm.
you put it as ethnic cleansing, it just sounds like, horrible, inhumane.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it is.
Yeah. Because there's no, because they're not telling them, like, we have this alternative for you. No, they're moving them out,
mm-hmm.
and then you go find your own place. No, you know, we're going to build a whole field there. We're turning this. We're turning your town. You're turning your town. Your housing tenement. Your Section 8. We're turning your project buildings into
luxury
apartments. And I don't, you know, like they say, you don't got
to
go home. You got to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And that's basically what they're saying. Like, go. You got to find someplace else. I don't know where you're going to go, but you ain't staying here. And we got, and guess what? We got the police. You don't want to do that?
Yeah.
We got the police that will come in here and take your ass, your black and brown ass, out of here.
Yeah.
And we'll do it quick, fast, quick, fast. Some of the worst are white liberals. Man, I cannot stand it, because the white liberals are far, far different than like white revolutionaries that consider themselves allies. They understand it. They don't run from.
Mm-hmm.
They don't run. They understand that there's a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But
they're
white liberals.
Like,
They
didn't like being uncomfortable.
No, no doubt about it, man. I've got some ears on you guys, but I've been there. I have seen it. I have seen it. I've seen those white liberals be uncomfortable, really uncomfortable with conversations like. Conversations that I was having with a broader audience.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can you kind of like why? How would you like me to repackage it? We're
mm-hmm.
talking about
mm-hmm.
structural racism.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and here's the thing: white liberals they prefer the conversation of racism to be confined into a box that consists of name calling,
mm-hmm.
right? Of name calling, and truly. That's the most innocuous form. That's the most innocuous form, because as they say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. But yeah, we're not trying to have no white folks call us nigger, but that is a lot less deleterious than white folks, conservatives and Republicans, signing crime bill acts that will send the police in there, that will do jump ups, will see you make some kind of furtive movement, clap, 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 bang, bang, bang. You know what I'm saying? That's, you know, or to have you moved out of your community, to have like draconian, you know, criminal justice policies and those things of that nature. They don't, white liberals don't want any conversation about racism around that. They want it kept, because as long as they can say, guess what, Dara, I've never called someone a nigger before. I'm not a racist, you know. And then you have a little further conversation with them down the line a couple weeks later, and you hear them talking there about you know, the benefits of moving some black and brown people out of Suitland and building some high-rise condos and so forth. You know, so, they don't want that to be attached. They don't want and they'll use that coded language, like, yeah, these undesirables, got to move them out. But I didn't call you a nigger. So I can't be racist. But I support policies.
Yeah.
That will take your dark ass
and
put you on the corner.
Yeah,
you know.
Too much crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Buzzwords that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Sell political flames. I
yeah.
mean, both sides do it. It's just, I mean, I think in the system of capitalism, everything is just like corrupt.
Yep.
I feel like that's just the root of a lot of what we go through today.
And you said it. Capitalism and structural racism are like she said, they're cousins.
They're cousins.
They're And intertwined,
mm-hmm.
intertwined. The slave trade does not exist
without
capitalism,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. Just
I mean,
does not.
Yeah.
Does not. If it was not a money making venture, no. They was like,
no,
shit. I'm not gonna house these niggers there. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll just basically let them go out there and fend for themselves.
Yeah.
Why am I gonna feed and house them if I can't make no money off
mm-hmm.
their black ass? You know.
Yeah.
Do you have the last word, Dara?
No, there's just, like, I've just been thinking about, or listening to what you all have been saying and things like that, and I'm just thinking, okay, how are there other crazy, or I was just thinking, like, day-to-day life, you know, we've already talked about the gentrification, the ethnic cleansing, the of areas, especially. I was thinking about how they've been doing that in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot,
yep.
And not just D.C., but I was, you know, like, learning that D.C. was chocolate.
Yeah,
exactly.
And now you go any corner of DC,
exactly.
And then also, like, you know, how they're buying people they're buying people out of their homes,
yep.
homes that they've had
yep.
for years, homes that they like were able to purchase.
That's right.
With, you know, of course, times were different, so and interests were different. So, but it still makes a lot to them. This could have been their family home, and you're just buying it, repurposing it, or building it into $1 million, like you all said, condos, townhomes.
That's right.
Nobody can afford it except for a certain demographic of people.
That's right.
We all know who they're targeted
yep.
for.
Yep.
Like,
Yeah.
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 And it's happening to all the Virginia, like, I don't know. Like, of course they live nice and stuff, but they're not meant for me. It's not meant for us to live in. It's meant for this area, and it's like, I remember being younger and, like, just going in certain, like, or certain areas of PC, where it's okay, yeah, like, these are where the bigger houses are, these are where the like, these are, it's like, where, I don't know, Congress people live.
Yeah.
People in those type of field, or that kind of work, but now it's like, everywhere you turn, once you go, literally right when you go into D.C., right when you take go over the bridge into Virginia, it's like, it's everywhere, and it's happening too often that it's like, okay, well, now where are we supposed to live? Now we're supposed to accommodate and still continue to move
out
of the places where we were used to, where we felt comfortable, where it was meant for us to be. And now we have to take that, take our community, and plant some, and build a new space that's comforting for us.
Right. Right. I appreciate y'all. Like, this is an amazing show because how words and nomenclature and all, you know, these different terminologies, you know, led to a path where we talked about, you know, even broader, you know, political, you know, politics behind a range of things, like in terms of how we've been trained to think. How we've been trained to think, and we can retrain our things ourselves how to think, in a very, you know, to me, being pro-black means loving yourself, loving your community. Why wouldn't it be? You know what I'm saying? If you're a woman, being pro-woman means loving yourself. It doesn't mean, you know, hating somebody else. We don't have to. You know what I'm saying? It, like, you know, but that's another thing they try to make you think. If you say you're pro-black, what does that mean?
Yeah.
No. White man, white woman, what you're doing is you're trying, because all you've known in terms of race and whatever has been centered around hate. So when you think white power, right, or pro-white, that's completely different than someone that's pro-black or black power, right? White power has been about imposing their will on non-white peoples. Black power, as defined by initially Frederick Douglass and then later on by Mukasa Dada, you know, at the time, Willie Ricks and Stokely Carmichael, you know, who end up becoming Kwame Ture, when they defined black power was the ability for black people to determine their own destinies, to have self-determination. It wasn't based upon hating white folks or going in and using police to beat them and this, that, and the other. That, you know, that's what they do. And so when they hear that, when they hear Kai saying, I'm pro-black, I love myself, you know, their first thing is, oh, he must hate everyone, and he hates everyone non-black. No, he loves himself. That's y'all. You can't get past that whole thing. Yeah, you can't get, because white power has always been about death, destruction, imperialism, colonialism. It's always been that. No one can say that. That is rooted in history, and it's a damn fact. I'll take it on CNN and whatever. It has always been rooted in going all the way back to when white folks banded together after Bacon's Rebellion and before that, when they banded together to go and usurp land in Africa. They were saying, listen, we've got to band together, us white folks in Europe. Let's stop fighting each other. Let's go in there and cut this continent up, cut it up like a cake. You take this, you take that. And the way we're going to do it, any resistance, they're going to get put down. And put down means death. They're going to be killed. So I appreciate your time. I'm Solomon, you know, for Dara and Kai and our brother Razak, who couldn't be here today. You've been listening to Your World News and the Nimbrew Media Collective. Until next time, peace. Yes. Right on.